Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles. I feel you're going to stay.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. From the National Institutes of Naturopathy, we have an article published in the Journal of Midlife Health that shows that intermittent fasting lowers your risk of osteoporosis. That's important. We have a lot more studies behind that showing how we can live a longer and healthier life. Then today, I didn't have time yesterday, but today I will. We'll go into it's an important article on numbers, because so much of what we've been told about the coronavirus and its lethalness and how common it is are based upon speculation. And what if the speculators are wrong? What if they have the wrong information? So today, yes, numbers matter. Richard Gale, myself. The article is published on Progressive Radio Network site, prn.fm, and I'll share it with you. Also today, do college students hate free speech? Well, this is a short video that answers that. Then, the truth why everyone is suddenly getting offended, followed by someone who is known to offend a whole lot of people, George Carlin. And I want you to hear this because if you like George Carlin, you really appreciate it. If you don't, well, then don't listen. But Carlin believed, and many others believe, including a good friend of mine for 45 years, Dick Gregory, that you have the right not to go to a comedy club or to watch a comedy special, but you do not have the right to tell a comedian you can't joke about A, B, C, and D because it might offend me. Lenny Bruce, think of all the people today who you don't see Richard Pryor or even their work being presented again because it would be, quote, insensitive and creating some form of emotional reaction. Now, these are the very same people who say, we don't believe that free speech should be for you. We want free speech. We want to be able to yell and scream and as if we have a right to. We want to be able to get rid of you if you're a teacher who says anything except making us feel comfortable, like our parents did. Why isn't anyone taking a look at the parents of these immature college students and millennials? That conversation is not happening, and it should. So after these segments, time permitting, I'm going to ask you to call in and give your ideas about what has gone wrong with parenting. Why is it that there's a group of parents, principally professionals, and there are a lot of them, when you add in the 17 million professional class, highly educated, highly motivated, very disciplined, and successful. But then at what cost? What price did they pay for that success, the imbalance in their life? And by the way, I have a lecture I did here at the anti-aging clinical study, and I sent it up. It's now posted on YouTube, so you can all download it, and it's about an hour long, and it's about how to rebalance your life. And that message goes to a lot of professionals, generally from my age group, the baby boomers. And what kind of parent did you become versus what kind of parent was your parents, the ones who frequently didn't go to college, grew up during the Great Depression and World War II. So they had a different parenting set of parenting skills. What's wrong with parenting today for a majority of the young people? Because when you add in the parents, you're dealing with about 34 million adults. Then add in their children, you're up to over 50 million, minimally. So that's a good segment of the population. And so you'll have a chance to call in. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Also, I'm not at this moment last night because I was up to about 2 this morning talking with people who are sick and need help. But for the next 50 days, I cannot and will not be taking any calls. I will not be answering any communications because between overseeing all the people doing their health support group at home, plus all the people here on campus and all the lectures and counseling, it's just nonstop from 4 in the morning till, well, last night, 2. So when I finish this and able to return to a fairly normal day, I'll be happy to address those issues, but please do not email me, do not leave messages, because I just do not have the time to put it all in a day. So that's our show today. Now let's go to the issues. According to the National Institute of Naturopathy, fasting can improve reproduction and mental health, as well as lower the risk of musculoskeletal disorders in women. That's based upon this new research published in the Journal of Midlife Health. Researchers from the National Institute of Naturopathy in India found evidence that fasting not only prevents metabolic disorders, that's your diabetes and heart disease, but also improves bone health. The researchers used the term fasting to refer to intermittent fasting, meaning caloric restriction, but a lot of people don't know what intermittent fasting is. Intermittent fasting is currently one of the most popular fitness trends around the world. Many people use it not only to lose weight, but also to improve their overall health. Intermittent fasting, as the name suggests, is an eating pattern that cycles between periods of eating and abstinence. For example, here, everyone finishes their final meal at around 6 o'clock and then doesn't eat again till 9 o'clock the next morning. So we have between, on the low end, 12 hours, and the high end, 15 hours. That really helps the body. And technically, it's not a diet. And of course, what you're doing is you're discouraging certain types of food and beverages, like no energy drinks, no carbonated beverages, no caffeine, no soft drinks, no sugary drinks, drinking healthy, clean juices and water. And they're coming up with some really unique outcomes. So that's what we're doing. And this shows that it can really impact your metabolism because it resets the body's metabolic process and allows cells to regenerate, leading to many documented benefits. For instance, intermittent fasting has been shown to lower the risk of metabolic abnormalities and cardiovascular disease. That's the number one killer. So that's good. It also lowers the LDL, the bad cholesterol, and lowers your blood pressure. That's also life-saving. It reduces your opportunity for type 2 diabetes and slows down the disease's progression. That's also important. But now we're seeing that it also helps remineralize your bone in creating more bone density, especially in women who are otherwise at risk of osteoporosis. So all that's good as long as you can stop eating and stop eating the junk food. From the University College London and Turku University Hospital in Finland, the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, and the Bispebjerg University Hospital in Denmark and Oregon State University, this is a multi-group, they looked at a cohort study of 116,043 participants. That's a statistically significant association between overall healthy lifestyle and increased number of disease-free life years. Of the 16 different lifestyle profiles studied, the 4 that are associated with the greatest disease-free life years, including body mass index, there's your belly, there's your fat body, and also physical activity and not consuming the alcohol, and never smoking. Now, I believe that those could have been expanded, but at least they showed that as long as you're engaged in healthy lifestyle, you will have more years later in life without disease. And right now, most Americans have multiple diseases by the time they hit 40. So the evidence is there, but the desire to change to a healthy lifestyle is not yet there in most people. From University College London, comes a study published in Scientific Reports that resveratrol, res, R-E-S, vera, V-E-R-A, trol, T-R-O-L, three syllables, resveratrol, which is commonly found in grapes, grape juice, and fermented grapes, which is red wine, can mimic estrogen to activate anti-aging proteins called sirtuins, S-I-R-T-U-I-N-S, and that can help slow down the aging process. That's good. So my suggestion, make sure you're having grapes or grape juice or grape concentrate or grape powders and or supplement with 100 to 300 milligrams a day of resveratrol. And that is good. Also, from the Federal University of Piauí in Brazil comes a study about B12 and folic acid. When you don't have enough of either, you have an increased risk of elevated homocysteine and cognitive impairment. When you take vitamin C, folic acid, B12, and B6, you have less risk of homocysteine, which means homocysteine increases your risk of heart attacks and strokes. So simply having a B complex can help prevent heart attacks and strokes. But if you're taking an aspirin a day, that frequently will destroy the uptake of vitamin C, B6, B12, and folic acid. From the University of California at Los Angeles comes a study published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Neurogastroenterology and Mortality. And in it, it talks about how patients with irritable bowel syndrome, when practicing mindfulness meditation, improve their overall body because they're reducing stress. And stress, chronic stress in particular, is a way to hurt the body and can actually cause death. This was a 3-month study, and where people in process quality of life, dealing with anxiety, which frequently goes hand in hand with gastrointestinal symptoms. The more stressed you are, the more you manifest gastrointestinal problems, digestive problems, and the itises, ileitis, gastritis, etc. I'm suggesting 20 minutes twice a day of mindful meditation. Now, Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston took a look at the gut's role in food allergies, and they found changes in gut microbiota that can prevent or even reverse food allergies by getting rid of the sugar and getting rid of things that you know or suspect you could be allergic to. And there's the Coco Pulse test you can take. It's a simple test. It works this way. In the morning, on an empty stomach, you have a single item of food. You take your pulse while still in bed for 60 seconds. Write it down. Let's say it's 70. Then you take a single item of food, not a lot, like a teaspoon. You put it in your mouth. You don't even have to swallow it. Just putting it in your mouth for about a minute. And then you wait 20 minutes. Then you take your pulse again. If your pulse, without any movement, without getting up, is now 75, there's a high probability that you are allergic to that. So therefore, you eliminate that. So every day for, let's say, a month, you're testing some other item until you've gone through the principal items that you take on a regular basis. And that way, you can get a completely different outcome with allergies. Now, allergies don't always manifest the same. It's not like you eat strawberries and you end up with a flushed face or red ear lobes or sniffles. You could have a brain allergy. In fact, there was a time when a manager of a very well-known musician contacted me and said, maybe you can help. The doctors can't. Been to every allergist, nothing works. What is it? Or for some reason, when this person goes on stage, they seem to change. They get highly irritable, and they lose that normally calm and laid-back disposition. When speaking with the performer, I simply ask, what changes in the days when you are performing? He said, nothing. I'm the same. I eat the same foods, drink the same beverages, with the exception of I calm myself down by having a glass of milk before I perform. Well, we didn't simple test, an allergy test with milk, and he was allergic to it. Got rid of the milk, nothing else, just that. Within 1 week, and it generally takes 1 week to purge the body of the antigen response, he was normal again. It can be that simple. People who end up with muscle pains and problems, distension, bloating, gas, more often than not, it's a problem with what we're consuming. From Akram Hospital in Iran, published in the peer-reviewed journal Dermatological Therapy, probiotics can help treat acne. Now, we know that acne is caused by chronic inflammation, is often treated with antibiotics. But a recent analysis published in Dermatological Therapy indicates that probiotics may be an effective alternative. So they used probiotics, and lo and behold, acne cleared up. Something simple. From Stanford University, treatment relieves depression in 90% of participants in a small study. And what they're saying from Stanford is this new form of magnetic brain stimulation rapidly relieves symptoms of severe depression in 90% of participants in a small study conducted by researchers at the Stanford University School of Medicine. Just recently, and this was a double-blind trial, by the way, which half the participants are receiving fake treatment, and the magnets work. Remember, I said to you that I had met Dr. William Philpott and a Dr. Fox down at the Tri-State Healing Center. We asked some of the patients would they like to volunteer, and we had a large group. We had thousands and thousands of patients, and the reason we had so many patients, and they were coming from other Orthodox or alternative doctor centers, because we had a reputation for getting positive results, positive outcomes, including reversal of almost every disease you could imagine. And so a group decided yes, and we did it with pain, we did it with joint problems, knee problems, hip problems, foot and leg swelling, intermittent claudication, and depression and anxiety. And there were two different approaches. One was electrostimulation of magnets using frequencies that Dr. Fox adjusted depending upon what was going on in your body, and then fixed magnets that Dr. Philpott had. And if you had depression or anxiety, you simply slept with these magnets right up against the back of your head. And we had phenomenal outcomes. So this is going back till 1988. This was just published, this new one was just published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. So they had a huge improvement in depression using their therapies. And what it's doing is calming the brain chatter, and it makes a difference. So just something we've been suggesting and using for a long time is just now becoming officially accepted. From Tufts University comes a study about how flavonoids intake and MRI markers of the brain's health in the Framingham offspring cohort. What this means is simply this. According to this study up in Tufts University, flavonoid intake is associated with a reduced risk of Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. And evidence relating dietary flavonoid intake to brain health based on MRIs was lacking, so they wanted to do a study where they could measure it. So they did, especially the white matter hyperintensities volume, or what is called WMHV, and the hippocampal volume, which is HV. And they found substantial improvement in brain health using the flavonoids. Well, the flavonoids are easy to obtain. You know, when you're eating your berries, you're getting flavonoids. Apples, flavonoids. Onions, flavonoids. If you just have a healthy plant-based diet, you're flooding the body with healing flavonoids. Simple. We're 19 minutes into our program. What we're going to do is we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to share with you our latest research on the numbers involving coronavirus and what we can accept and what we should challenge. And this does not in any way mitigate the seriousness of the disease, nor the ease in spreading it. But it does show you that the people heading this have been substantially wrong on almost everything they've told us about the disease process. Back in a moment. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. For the millions of people who are following the daily reports and analysis of the COVID-19 pandemic, one thing should be evident. There are far more questions arising than answers. And there are certainly less answers to be relied upon. Consequently, we are being inundated with numbers and more numbers, and the numbers of cases of infection, the numbers of tests performed or that should be performed, the number of masks, hospital beds, and ventilators necessary, and the number of deaths. Consider the early predictions made by the National Institute of Health and National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease Director Anthony Fauci that we might expect 1.7 million deaths. Now, later, he reduced his numbers to that of a regular flu season. Or there is one of the nation's chief physicians serving Congress in the Supreme Court, Dr. Brian Monahan, who pulled unsubstantiated figures from the astral plane to warn NBC that up to 150 million Americans will become infected. Based upon what evidence? I guess just the evidence that these are respected and important people. Moreover, confusion seems to be rampant throughout much of the nation's healthcare infrastructure. We're being deprived of basic facts because even the experts don't have them. Perhaps we have all seen the images of medical personnel having to wear black garbage bags as protective gear in a New York hospital or nurses' reports about having to wash and share face masks due to shortages. One revelation that COVID-19 is mirroring back to us in this dire state of our corporate healthcare system and the dearth of doctors compared to other developed nations. In effect, our medical industrial complex, which has been failing us miserably and deadly failing for decades and very expensive, we will spend about $3.5 trillion this year on our failed healthcare system. And there's virtually nothing in there to deal with prevention. There's nothing in there to deal with any form of alternative approach that works and is proven by the Library of Medicine. But should we be surprised about the failures of American medicine? Funding that should go towards a resilient medical infrastructure and preventative health measures in times of emergency has been neglected for at least 40 years. If the nation's healthcare infrastructure had progressed to meet its population's demands, it would have lessened the pandemic significantly. Instead, the U.S. budget has been funneling off to sustain our imperialist military adventures and provide bailouts for the mega transnational corporations and banks and billionaires. Part of the problem is that there are no accurate epidemiological and statistical analysis, even for fatality numbers, that are based upon sound scientific principles. Perhaps one of the clearest examples to try to understand this confusion is to look at the huge discrepancy in infection rates and deaths between different countries, especially neighboring countries in Europe. How does one account for an approximate 1,810 deaths per 103,000 cases in Germany, and with 8,900 deaths per 98,000 cases right next door in France. Each has comparable economies and advanced healthcare systems. Is it that there are no reliable mechanisms for proper data collection and analysis? I think, yes, they do have those. It seems to be that every government is doing its own thing, and therefore all the data we have to determine the severity of the pandemic is skewed. The distinguished physician and German politician, Dr. Wolfgang Wodarg, who earlier declared the H1N1 swine flu pandemic as, quote, one of the greatest medical scandals of the century, he was right, by the way, has again warned that the COVID-19 hype is, quote, causing considerable damage to our freedom and personal rights through frivolous and unjustified quarantine measures and restrictions, end quote. Commenting on the current situation, Dr. Wodarg argues that, quote, evidence-based epidemiology assessment is drowning in the mainstream of fear-mongers in labs, media, and ministries, end quote. In the United States, which closely follows or controls the World Health Organization, it is a larger mess. For example, the World Health Organization's recent guidelines divide COVID-19 cases into two categories. First are those cases that have been confirmed by properly identifying the virus through laboratory testing. The second are those cases that have been, quote, assigned to a clinical epidemiological diagnosis of COVID-19 where laboratory confirmation is inconclusive or not available. In other words, people are being ruled as COVID-19 positive without any laboratory confirmation in the vast majority of cases. Furthermore, the World Health Organization now recommends that deaths in the second category should be attributed exclusively to the COVID coronavirus. One does not require a medical degree to realize how this is resulting in faulty tabulation of infection and death rates. The U.S. has also adopted the World Health Organization guidelines according to the National Vital Statistics System. The National Vital Statistics System document explaining how deaths should be reported on death certificates states, quote, COVID-19 should be reported on the death certificate of all descendants where the disease caused or is assumed to have caused or contributed to death, end quote. That is not science. That is voodoo. So what impact would this have on fatality numbers if deaths without laboratory confirmation are in fact caused by other illnesses? We already know that the virus is most lethal in the elderly and persons with pre-existing medical conditions, though other people are certainly susceptible. Now, we have presented a chart that I'll simply summarize, but when you download this article, you can see it for yourself. And this was produced by that group, the National Vital Statistics System, not ours, theirs. And what it does, it shows that weekly pneumonia deaths from 2013 till today, 7 years. Note the dramatic, unprecedented decrease in deaths associated with pneumonia just since the arrival of the coronavirus in the United States. Well, how in the world did that happen? Is there any invisible war between the COVID-19 and pneumonia causing pathogens such as flu or respiratory virus or bacteria or mycoplasma or fungi to infect victims? The chart is nothing more than an illusion. The reason for this remarkable decrease dropping right off the cliff, suddenly you have almost every year about the same number of deaths from pneumonia, and then boom. Zero, goes right down to nothing. This is not just, in my opinion, human error. This is scientific negligence. Likewise, as both confirmed and assumed cases of COVID-19 climb, influenza cases are falling. To add to the confusion, just as the CDC now tallies COVID-19 deaths, it has done the same by conflating influenza and pneumonia deaths, and it's done this for years. In fact, 15 years ago, we did a one-hour program where we managed to get the CDC's own statistics for how many people died of the flu. And we then compared that with how many people died of pneumonia. And lo and behold, the vast majority of people died of pneumonia. In fact, one year where there were 36,000 deaths, and do you remember they said every single year, every newscaster says, and 36,000 people die of the flu. None of that was true. The entire 100% of the American media were lying. Were they just incompetent? Were they that irresponsible that they wouldn't even validate a figure was correct when they were scaring the people and getting their flu shot? Whatever their motive, and I cannot ascribe motive, they were wrong. The CDC was wrong. The U.S. government was wrong. The U.S. Public Health Service was wrong. So everyone was saying, get your flu shot because you don't want to be one of those 36,000 people dying. But year after year, we had all the years. There was under 1,000 people die of flu in one year, and then maybe 1,300 another year. And I think the highest we ever saw was around 3,000. So none of the figures we were told by the government and all of its agencies and all the media, none of it was right. They were lying. Why they were lying, I cannot know that because I'm not in their mind. However, they were lying, but they brought the two figures together and flu got 100% of the credit. So if you had 5% dying of the flu and 95% dying of pneumonia, suddenly 100% of the people were dying of the flu. However, no distinction is made between the two, and influenza and pneumonia deaths are grouped together. It's an excellent propaganda tool for keeping people nervous when flu season arrives in order to get rid of and distribute about 160 million plus vaccine doses that our taxpayers purchase every year. As physician Dr. Ken Stoller, S-T-O-L-L-E-R, wrote, to the Office of Assistant Secretary of Planning and Evaluation at the Department of Health and Human Services, quote, U.S. data on influenza deaths are false and misleading. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention acknowledges a difference between flu deaths and flu-associated deaths, yet uses the term interchangeably. Additionally, there are significant statistical incompatibilities between official estimates and national vital statistics data. Compounding these problems is a marketing of fear, the CDC communication strategy in which medical experts, quote, predict dire outcomes, end quote, during flu seasons, end quote. And now we discover the same agency recategorizing influenza pneumonia cases as, you guessed it, COVID-19. In the same vein, how many deaths assigned to the flu may actually be caused by the coronavirus. Dr. Woodard notes that, quote, it is the well-known fact that in every flu wave, 7 to 15% of acute respiratory illnesses are coming along with coronaviruses, end quote. He further warns that, quote, we are currently not measuring the incidence of coronavirus diseases, but the activity of the specialists searching for them, end quote. We still do not know COVID-19's pathogenic role and impact compared to the common seasonal flu. Even if we erroneously assume the CDC's figures are accurate, as of today, there are 364,700 cases of coronavirus and almost 11,000 deaths. Now, that will be going up. Yet, this is a far cry from annual illnesses and deaths associated with the flu. Last year, according to Johns Hopkins University, there were over 35 million cases of flu infection and over 34,100 deaths. We have it charted. Their figures, not ours. We just found this chart and we've published it. And when did the entire economy ever shut down during the flu season? Even during the 2009 and 10 H1N1 flu scare, the swine flu scare, the hyped up pandemic that never was and was estimated to have killed only 17,000 people, life, and that's not only because every one of those lives count, but it's a statistic I'm only referring to. Life went on as normal. The World Health Organization's faux H1N1 pandemic resulted in only half the CDC's conventional estimates for annual deaths. Again, even if it's one person dying who didn't have to die or whose life could have been saved, that's important. So it's not understating the value of life. It is, however, calling them out for overstating by a huge margin and then conflating figures. And they haven't done the autopsies. They haven't done the biologicals on autopsies to say, did a person die of the flu? Did they die of pneumonia? And if they did die of the flu or pneumonia, how much the COVID-19 virus did they have in their body? Or did they have any? Right now, all of those deaths are attributed to the COVID-19, so we're getting false information. Curiously, the World Health Organization's misinformation, the experts there, the British Health Ministry and the CDC could not have been more wrong in their predictions, in their fear tactics. Curiously, this St. Johns Hopkins researchers estimated 61,000 deaths from during the 2017-18 flu season, while the CDC reported it being over 80,000. That's a 25% margin of error. This also completely ignores comorbidity, deaths directly due to other medical complications, usually pre-existing conditions that are independent from the virus. And let me explain how that works. We saw this in Italy. We saw it in Spain. We're seeing it in the United States. When you take a look at the incidence of heart disease, morbid obesity, and diabetes, especially in southern states, the most unhealthy states in America are Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, much of Texas, Georgia, and Arkansas, because the diet and the lifestyle are extremely unhealthy. So no matter what, those people in those states are more susceptible to dying of these comorbidity factors, the very diseases they had and in all probability would kill them. Now, if you take a look at those factors in Italy, the very first people for the first month, or almost 2 months, the average age of a death was 80. It's come down to around 77.7. There were a few younger people who became infected and died, and a lot of people now are asymptomatic, meaning that they have no symptoms at all. But did they do health checks to see what was the level of their vitamin C and vitamin D and other nutrients that can predict a person's immune response? Because if you have a strong immune system and you're younger, or if you have a strong immune system and you're older, then you're going to be less susceptible to manifesting symptoms. And if you do, they're going to be of shorter duration. There will be exceptions, but the general rule is the healthier you are, the more protection you put on your side. So if we want to be doing something positive worldwide, it's once and for all. Set aside all the politics and say, clean up your diet. The Italians and the Spanish, who are manifesting a large number of deaths, have very unhealthy diets. And they smoke like crazy. And when you're doing that much smoking and you're sedentary and you're overweight, and for years you've had high blood pressure, high blood sugar, you're morbidly obese, and you smoke, you're going to have at least 4 to 5 different killer diseases. So when these people ended up dying, 100% of the credit for their death and statistics went to the COVID-19. Now, if COVID-19 is that tipper, meaning you're going to die, you are dying, and now you get the coronavirus and that tips it over into death, why should the coronavirus be given 100% of the credit for your death? That means they're not considering anything about the lifestyle of these people. They're asking questions like, well, did these people go to church or did they go to social meetings or were they out having dinner when they shouldn't have? Would they have been better off had they been quarantined? Well, guess what? Quarantining yourself, if you have comorbidities, will not change the outcome of those morbidities. You're still going to die from them. And it's only when you get infected that might be a contributing factor. But they've never done the actual science. They've never done the autopsies and released it. They haven't even done the test. In the United States, we talk about testing people. Only 0.03% or 3.0%, which means 99.7% of Americans have not been tested. Well, then how do you know that they don't have a flu or pneumonia versus the COVID virus, so because the symptoms are almost identical. We don't know that. So they're making gross generalities, and then they're putting together political and ideological programs. Oh, you know, our lifestyles. I, for one, think that one of the most disastrous things that could have happened was to close down all businesses except those that were considered essential, like medical and food. Because we could have put in place responsible and reasonable protections. Stores could have been installed, just like in taxi cabs, glass, just like in banks, where you go up and you stay a certain number of feet away, you have to wear a mask and gloves, and you do a transaction. And that way the people can serve you, which keeps the business and its employees in place, and you get something you feel you need. And then practicing spacing, which I don't believe should be 6 feet, I believe it should be 10 feet, and some masks are barely protecting you. They're really only protecting you when you cough or sneeze, not normal breathing. But it is important to have masks, and if you can't get a 95 N95 mask, then you can make a mask. And I've given you the instructions on how to do that, where you're right up there. You're up over 90%. If you use a double-layered quilt with cotton on the inside and outside, and then clean it after each use with hydrogen peroxide or high-level alcohol. Regular alcohol will not kill the viruses. But we don't have good science right now. We have political science, and that's unfortunate. So we are crippling our economy, and there's a consequence to that. Normally, if you work in a restaurant and you quit or get fired, you'll have hundreds, if not thousands, of other restaurants that you could go to work for. But what if all these small restaurants close? The landlords are not forgiving the rent. They're not taking a rent holiday and say, we have a moratorium, you will not pay rent again until you're open again. Landlords are keeping the clock turning. So how many people in very low margin of profit businesses like restaurants, for example, and supermarkets, how many of them are going to be able to open in a month or two or three and get back into business? They will be bankrupt. How many businesses currently in the United States are only able to operate because they're in debt? They borrowed money, either legitimate money from a bank or less than legitimate from people. If you have a bar and you're running a deficit, unlikely a bank's going to give you a loan, but there'll be someone who'll give you a loan and you'll pay a very high interest rate on it. And they take over the ownership of your business if you can't pay them back. So that's what our economy is going to be. I predict that we will see the greatest depression in American history, the greatest depression in world history, because every single country, with only three exceptions, are completely in debt. The United States could spend, first of all, they should forgive all student debt. They should put a moratorium on all rents until businesses that have been closed are back in business, and forgive all rent that they have been paying or accumulating since they've been closed. And they should not just give all the money to the hedge funds, equity partners, Wall Street, and major corporations like American Airlines. The airlines alone will make hundreds of billions of dollars. They'll be made whole. But small businesses, no. They'll be going bankrupt at the highest level in world history, as far as companies. And those people are not going to have another job to go to, so you're going to have a massive amount of permanent unemployment. Now, as you may know, we have stated that based upon real statistics of how many people are actually out of work, it was between 22 and 26%, and we could justify those figures. Now they're saying it's up around 35%, which means at the height of the Great Depression, it was 25%, and I believe the figure is closer to 55% unemployment. So exactly how our economy is supposed to exist, especially local economies, when the person that would get paid by working a local mill, go and have dinner, the person who owns the diner goes to a movie, and the person that owned the movie goes to get dry cleaning, etc. That dollar's not going to spread around that economy anymore because all those people are going to be out of work. Whole industries like brick-and-mortar stores, especially movie theaters, the ones on the internet will be thriving. A friend of mine recently posited that he believed that the trillions upon trillions of dollars that are going to be given are not going to be used except as a cash pool to buy up businesses on the cheap when this is over. Because who's going to have cash? How many people right now don't have a nickel in the bank, and even if they can go out and buy food, they don't have the money to buy the amount that they need? We were already food insecure. 16 million children were food insecure. That means their family were insecure. That means 50 million Americans were food insecure. Where are they supposed to get any money to start up? So you'll see the game. You'll see the game of crony capitalism, vulture capitalism, predatory capitalism, neoliberal capitalism happening everywhere, because they've mismanaged this in its entirety. So, there are some facts we know. Physical distancing, wearing masks, consciously washing your hands, cleaning surfaces, that works not only here, but for decades it's worked in Asian countries, and it's proven to be effective. Perhaps this is a cultural thing. East Asians tend to have a very high sense of civil responsibility towards their neighbors than Americans, who regard wearing a mask in public or entering self-isolation as an annoyance and an inconvenience. For years, Chinese, Japanese, and Korean citizens have frequently worn masks because of air pollution and because of human disease prevention, and they just weren't feeling well. They did this to protect the outcome of their health. And the Japanese in particular and South Koreans have a very high level of personal hygiene in their home and in their lifestyle. Other nations have been able to contain the spread of the COVID-19. Unfortunately, American superiority complex and global exceptionalism has been one of our worst enemies. In the meantime, we desperately need scientifically valid numbers. We have them now. Let us stop listening to Anthony Fauci, the darling of the left at this moment, because I can show you a long litany of him being wrong on major issues, from AIDS on. I never will forget when one day a very tall woman, I'm guessing 6'2", 6'3", walked into my office, very thin, and she had her arms filled with folders. Her name was Lynn Gannett, and she said, "I want to show you what the world is unaware of." And I said, "What's that?" She said, "I am one of the researchers in the fast-tracking of the drug AZT. These are all the letters I've written to the FDA, the top compliance people, showing that the study is a fraud. It's not double-blinded. All the people are taking AZT because they opened up the capsules. They didn't want a placebo, a sugar pill. They wanted the real McCoy because they all believe that AZT would be this miracle drug. And so anything that tastes sweet, they're throwing away, and they're pulling their product. And people have died in the study, including in her group, and they just exclude that death to skew the studies. It's a fraud." So I spent the next 3 or 4 hours just reading through her reports, and I was just staggered that all governmental agencies that were involved, especially the FDA, knew that a major fraud was going on. But it was political expediency that caused us to be fast-tracked. And as a result, based upon the best research we can find, enormous amount of people lost their lives, not because of HIV infection and AIDS, defining illnesses, but because the package insert, the actual AZT insert, shows that one of the side effects of AZT was AIDS. You could not tell if a person was sick and dying because of AIDS or because of AZT, the drug. And that's where people started to come to the Tri-State Healing Center, because they didn't want to take AZT or hadn't gotten sick. And 1,200 of them over years we work with, not one died. And they made measurable improvements. So we've seen what Fauci and his colleagues have done to make a mess of so many things, and yet he is the point person. He's in his glory. So what is the likelihood that we will have a mandatory COVID-19 vaccination? Well, let me just give you a little heads up. The World Health Organization has already stated, the head of it, that we should be able to have a program where authorities can go into homes and forcibly test children. well, what happens if the children test positive? Are you going to take them to some hospital or detention center someplace to force them? So now they're suggesting a company. I just read it yesterday, and I'll share it with you tomorrow. They've come up with a badge or a wristband that shows that you have been tested and you're not COVID-19 positive. Well, what does it mean if you do test positive? Will you be able to get on an airplane, a bus, a subway, go into a store? This just opens up a society to incredible bias towards people. So just about everything we could do wrong, we're doing, and nothing are we doing right, like strengthen a person's immune system. And all the people would die of heart disease and cancer, suddenly attributing that without any, with no blood chemistry, no vital statistics to the COVID. That means that virtually all the figures we've been reporting are suspect. So just wanted to share this with you, something to think about. Now we're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
Feel good? There's so much bone, brother. How you feel, man?
I feel all right.
I call your name. I don't want no people to know you're in here. How you feel, fella? Hey, yeah. Sure getting down. Look at him. Ha. We're gonna have a punk good time. We're gonna have a punk good time.
I've got some really positive news today. It's been a year coming, but as of yesterday, we received our first shipment of a brand new product. It is called the Super Bowl or Superfood Breakfast. And does it pack a punch? We've blended the finest ingredients, including fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, and it's delicious. It went through all kinds of testing in our office. Here's what's in our breakfast bowl compared to yours. We have instant steel-cut oatmeal, oat fiber, coconut oil, brown rice protein, flaxseed powder, almond protein, coconut sugar, banana flakes, green bananas, vanilla, blueberries, pomegranates, acai extract, acerola complex, apples, bilberry, cherries, cranberries, goji berries, grapes and grapeseed extract, grapefruit and grapefruit seed or grape seed, papaya, prunes, raspberries, strawberries, watermelon, barley grass, parsley, spinach, carrots, pineapple, spirulina, radishes, celery, onion, collard greens, kale, asparagus, broccoli, sprouts, cauliflower, cabbage, and oats. Whoa! And it tastes absolutely scrumptious and delicious. And you're getting a special introductory offer. It's only $1.58 a serving. Where in this world can you go and get a delicious, nutritious bowl that will power punk, push everything into your body where every bite is just perfect in its taste? Well, here, $1.58 per serving. The regular price is $24.99. For you today, it's only $18.99. You get a big bag. It's a big bag, and it contains 12 servings. So it's brand new. Everybody in the office loves it, but it's taken a long time to pull all these ingredients together. I mean, because there's never been, to my knowledge, there's never been any product, especially a breakfast product, that has all of these proprietary ingredients in it. I mean, what I haven't even counted. I guess it's around 30 items in there. Every single one of them is a superstar. But it tastes, well, let me see. For me, it tastes like a slightly sweet almonds. That's what it tastes like. You're getting multiple sources of protein. It's got protein. It's got fiber. It's got a lot of phytonutrients, a lot of antioxidants, very easy to prepare. You can just put it into a bowl, put a little hot water on it, stir around, let it sit for 3 minutes. It's ready to go. Imagine you could travel with this anywhere, at any time, And whenever you're hungry, you're out camping, you can use it. You're on a flight, no, you can use it on a flight. What a great way to start your day. It is called Superfood Breakfast. And by the way, the artwork, which was just finished this morning and put up on our website, all the ingredients you see around the bowl, those are in the product. So it took a long time to perfect this, over a year, but you now get it. $1.58 per serving. Go into any restaurant and say, I just like a bowl of oatmeal. That's it, just oatmeal, nothing else. You think it's going to cost you $1.58? I don't think so. $5, $7. But what if you said, hold on a second, I want more than these steel-cut oats. All right, this is steel-cut oats. Put in some extra oat fiber and coconut oil. Put in some brown rice protein, flaxseed powder. I want some almond protein. I want some bananas. I want some blueberries and pomegranates, acai berry, acerola apples, bilberry. Oh, throw in some cherries and cranberries and goji berries and grapes. And put in there some papayas. I'll throw in some watermelon, barley, parsley, spinach. Do you have any idea what they would say to you? Well, we don't even have these in the store. I think we got a banana, and that's it. No, this is one of the most powerful things you can do for yourself. So it is extraordinarily delicious. But I had to disguise the taste of asparagus and broccoli and sprouts and cauliflower and collard greens and onions. You taste none of that. What you do taste, you taste the bananas and you taste the almonds. So it's delicious tasting. So give a call. I'm going to give you the number to call right now. I'm limited. Unfortunately, had I known when I put this order in, this is before the coronavirus, I would have ordered three times as much, but I didn't. So we're limited in how many we have available to sell to you. So that's it. So here's the number. Call this number. And mind you, it's only $1.56 per serving. There's nothing else I create that can be that cheap and so powerful and so good for you. The number to call is 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Again, 877-627-5065. And I'm ordering in a case down here. We have a great breakfast, and my daughter Shelley's down here as the chef. We're doing terrific. But I'm still going to treat them all to this because I think they'd just love this. And boy, there's nothing more you could think of to put into a bowl that would be healthy. So you got it. All right? Brand new, just today. Give a call. 877-627-5065. Also today, I just want to let you know, we've got our clean teeth toothpaste back in stock. This is the mint flavor. This, by the way, our toothpaste is fluoride-free, no sugar, no saccharin, no artificial flavors, and natural whitening power. Essential oils of clove and clove, tea tree oil, mints, calcium carbonate, that's your baking soda, sodium bicarbonate. Oh, we have everything good in here for you in your toothpaste. Peppermint extract, natural flavor. That's only $9.99. So we just got 5,000 tubes of clean teeth toothpaste back in stock. So two new products today. Now let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi, who's on the line. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I just wanted to let everybody in the audience know that we are still signing people up for our upcoming retreat. We did move the dates back. I signed up three people just this morning. So it's going to take place in Texas. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for people. And some people thought we were just canceling it altogether when we found out that we were going to still have it. People started signing up again. So we had a couple of cancellations. If people are interested in joining us at the retreat in Texas, please give me a call. My number is 903 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008.
Well, first of all the places in America, interesting because FedEx delivers, UPS delivers, and the local mail person delivers. And the local mail person said yesterday, when I went out to get the mail, said, "You all really take your health seriously. You're wearing masks and the little thing around the neck," she didn't know what it was, "and gloves." I said, "Yes, because we are in quarantine. We are extremely healthy. We have beautiful air. We have 56 acres. We have the beautiful lake." And the person said, "I've never seen anything this beautiful. I would see it from the road, and we heard that it was the most beautiful place in the county. But here I am." And I said, "Anytime you want to go on a tour, I'll be happy to take you around and show you." Because this goes back to the Judge family back in the 1920s. And these gardens are, you know, almost 90-plus years old. And it's one of the most beautiful, healthy places in the world to be. And when we're outside, no, there's no masks outside. But we are cautious. Everyone in the kitchen wears their masks, their ionizers. We have the state-of-the-art, I mean, the absolute best air filtration system that you can buy, that I bought from a scientist friend of mine, in all the major rooms. So we got that as a backup, plus people washing their hands. But it has not inhibited a single thing. All of our lectures, all of the workshops, the dining, the yoga, the meditation, our theater, where you lectured yesterday, and I heard, I wasn't able to attend, but I heard you really had a great lecture. I'll be lecturing there tonight. Watching classic movies, watching movies from some of the strongest minds in history that we play every day for 20 minutes and allow them to have an hour discussion about it. So lives are changing. Phenomenal results for the first 3 weeks. I mean, phenomenal. So at the end of this, we're going to have a confirmation, I'm sure, of the first test results back in October. And some of the people who were at the first study in October, November, are back because they benefited so much and they wanted even more information. And they're saying that this time around, since we're doing more meditation 3 hours every afternoon with nature, writing in our journals, reading, and they're doing a different type of reading. They're talking out loud when they're reading. So it's great, better for their memory, better to remember instead of just reading a page and forgetting what you've read. Same way when we see a film, we don't watch a whole film. We watch 20 minutes and have an open dialogue, and each person participates. So we're seeing some remarkable improvement. Two of the fellows have each lost, I think one said he lost 16 pounds, and another's lost around 12 pounds. And you can see their bellies are going down. And mind you, these are all senior citizens. So for senior citizens to be doing the quality workouts and the quality of focus and mindful meditation, it's terrific. And if there was one place I want to be, I want to be in one of the safest environments on the planet, and this is it. So, yeah, we just pushed it back a bit, but airplanes are virtually empty, and we have protocols that Luann will go over with everyone who wants to come to make sure you're as protected as a human being can be. And our protocols are far more strict than any of the government's giving. And not a single person here is sick, not a single person. And mind you, we're in our third week.